Dr. Bill Deagle, that's me, and our special guest tonight is Dr. Nick Begich, expert on harm, mind control, environmentalism, and an educator with the most amazing credentials. Again, he's a speaker, a conference leader around the world, and I've been on one of the most powerful and important talk shows in America. And we're very honored to have Dr. Nick Begich here tonight. He has new updated information from Freedom, and also some brand new DVDs available that he has, the HARP, the update, Angels Still Don't Play the HARP, and Earth Changes, the Alaska Sounds the Alarm. So we're dealing with these very important issues, and not only trying to show you the serious issues, but solutions, because that's what we do on this network. We want to get the full truth, and we want to get rather than the news without the answer. Welcome to the program, Dr. Nick.
That's good to be with you again, Dr. Deagle. You know, the issues that, you know, that we've been dealing with recently, including the issue of weather modification, is, you know, has made, you know, a little bit more news lately. There was a real recent paper just released back in October of last year. It was by Dr. Ben Eastland on a concept for modifying weather with perhaps as much as 1,600 times less energy than what he thought was necessary just a number of years ago. So,
oh, really? So and they're talking about using the satellite laser technologies and scalar weapons.
What they're thinking about and what he's proposing is perhaps a manipulation of either gravitational waves or acoustic waves, which, you know, when you think about that, you know, as a concept from his perspective, it's much different than what he had earlier done for the European Space Agency with using space-based lasers or ground-based systems such as HARP, which he was involved in inventing early in the 1980s. So, you know, there's a lot that has been happening, but basically, once again, using really energy and different forms of energy to manipulate environmental factors.
Right. So, in other words, ways of one of the things that was quite noteworthy in terms of the way that the storms were collected over the area of New Orleans and the Gulf States was that it appeared that there was just from our view, this transmission vortex that pulled the storm zone in. And it didn't look like just a typical scalar type of thing or, you know, heating up of the ionosphere that actually appears against it. It appeared to be much more of a way of actually collecting energy that's naturally out there and combining it and clearing it. And that type of technology, of course, is orders of beyond the laser heating of the ionosphere or perhaps scalar weapons to try to affect the ionosphere pattern up the upper surface.
Exactly. I mean, what we're talking about are really new technologies, leading edge technologies that are really changing not just the way in which weather systems might be manipulated, but when you're talking about very large systems, when you're thinking about adding perhaps small amounts of energy in comparison to what nature is generating, but at the proper trigger moments or adding in that last straw on the camel's back, so to speak, to kick these natural systems into chaos. And a lot of the projects that have been developed over the years, including HARP when it was originally conceived, was the idea of, in one application, you know, creating a chain reaction or a chaotic event in the ionosphere layer above the Earth's surface about 30 miles. And the idea was that, and it was discovered early on, that if you pumped, for instance, very low frequency energy within a certain window frequency, it would cause the ionosphere, right where it coupled with an upper layer called the magnetosphere, another highly charged area,
right,
would actually amplify those signals by up to 1,000 times by sort of grabbing the energy that was already available there. So
it was probably doing things like scalar, low-frequency harmonic wave sound waves.
Right.
And
then, you know, you sort of capitalize on other energy that's available naturally, but then that energy ends up being manipulated or ducted into a certain form so that it can be used in these various kinds of weapons applications. So,
yes.
So now you've got these huge instruments on the ground, but then when you think about them as resonators more than you think about them as powerful, you know, transmitters of huge amounts of energy, but systems that are designed to capitalize on energy that might already be available in huge quantities by nature itself.
In other words, what you're talking about is kind of rectifying the energy out there, directing it, and then controlling the chaos of this energy, you know, or connecting the storm or energy cells to create a pattern that creates on.
Yeah, I think this is more in line with what, you know, what maybe the research is starting to show is, you know, it's more about that than about necessarily the amounts of energy, even although, you know, large amounts of energy are involved. If you think about it in the same way that, you know, that some of the impacts on living organisms are work in the same venue, you know, most of the energy sort of passes through like static between the stations. But when you get a resonance or a harmony between the transmitter and the receiver, then, you know, then you get the, you know, chemical reactions that occur in, you know, living organisms like human beings and plants and everything else. So,
right.
You know, the basic science, you know, when you think about it, most things that we think of as physical are, you know, physics tells us are really basically moving bodies of energy. And so
right. Energy
as a system for manipulating other systems is what we're really talking about.
Right. Now, of course, the big questions that have come whenever we have all this information, and I guess we've got a lot more Freedom of Information Act type information, primarily on the area of weather modification or any other application, scalar or the higher.
Well, you know, in all of these areas, you know, there's always a lot of information that flows out. You know, lately, a lot of that's been constrained. In fact, in the last 4 years, it's probably, you know, four or five times as much information is being withheld as was previously being released. At the same time, huge amounts of new information are being classified like never before. So it's getting a little more difficult. But what has, you know, come to light over the years through either Freedom of Information Act requests or other public disclosures, when you start to correlate those, you see some pretty amazing patterns emerge, and all of these fall into this general category of what the military is now calling controlled effects, and whether they're directed at hardware or software or natural systems, including humans, this is what the military is often referring to now as also the revolution of military affairs, and they compare it to atomic weapons in the last century or even gunpowder in the Middle Ages. In terms
right.
of what it did for warfare changes.
Right, and of course we talk about this as the definition, I guess, of non-lethal weapons, which is a big area for their research. And their definition is it kills less than 25% of those that are affected with non-lethal.
Exactly, and it's you know, a Claiborne landmine would fall into that category. No one would think that was non-lethal, but nonetheless, those are the kind of definitions that are used, and non-lethal weapons actually are more apt to be discharged. In fact, you know, because the person holding it believes that it's not going to kill. And
just like
fact,
a taser, it'll give 50,000 volts, but if the electrodes are across the chest or heart, what is other reasons medically kill them?
Right. You know, or if you know, you've got other systems, for instance, even tear gas. If someone has, you know, a case of asthma or other lung disorders, you know, they
right.
can, it can be quite fatal. And in fact, has been in many instances.
Right.
In the United States, as an example, rubber bullets the same way.
Right.
But when you're talking about some of the more exotic weapons now, one of the ones the Marines announced a few years ago was this device that creates heating sensation on the surface skin using microwave radiation. They have dish on a Humvee, and it got quite a bit of notoriety. But what they didn't tell you is, you know, by modifying the waveform, pulse rate, or any other number of perimeters dealing with that microwave dish within its capability, you could affect any of the vital organs of the body.
Yeah, you can cause a heart attack, a stroke. You can cause disorientation, nausea,
right.
diarrhea. You can basically tune into a specific body system.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In fact, I have on my website a therapeutic device called Lumen Photon, which we just started carrying. It's a very amazing device based on the frequencies of infrared light and harmonic pulses in the body system. Stimulate healing, regeneration, and so on. Well, the lethal side of that. To reduce a specific disease state, or, you know, literally cancer, give them a heart attack, stroke, whatever.
That's exactly right. In fact, there was a publication, a fairly early one. It was Low Intensity Conflict in Modern Technology, and it was produced in Maxwell Air Force Base back in 1984, where they first started kind of looking at some of this and calling for the dosimetry handbooks to be developed. And so the Air Force and others actually got the University of Utah to produce that, and the Radio Frequency Dosimetry Handbook was issued in the 80s, and has probably been updated since then. But all of these initial sort of steps were oriented towards developing new classes of weapons that could be used perhaps in a less visual way than wars fought in the past, because this became a big issue for a number of reasons. You know, even today with press reports coming out of Iraq and the kind of visual images, these would be mitigated and avoided, and yet the same kind and same level of destruction could take place. And so, you know, a way to kind of control large populations is really what a lot of these advances were about. And within the, you know, within the confines of chemical and biological treaties, these electromagnetic weapon systems that override natural, very subtle energies within the body, we're allowed to advance, and we're encouraged, in fact, to do exactly that, not just
right.
for foreign use, but for domestic as well.
Right. In fact, I remember that there's actually a title document that, and I don't remember the exact number of titles, but it was one that allows both the U.S. government and their contract military industrial development, military and or civilian contract for experimentation on the biological, chemical, and quote, non-lethal and lethal weapons.
That's correct, and also there was a joint agreement, you know, between the United States Justice Department and DOD in terms of how non-lethal weapons would be funded through the 80s and into the 90s, and this was with a priority if they could be used for dual use, for foreign adversaries as well as for domestic riot control and, you know, other purposes. And, you know, the interesting thing about that, the policy development was the language which essentially said that it could be used on anyone who violated or disagreed with American policy, and, you know,
including domestic people who are actually just using their First Amendment rights to free speech.
Right, exactly right. And I, you know, that's you know, that becomes pretty disturbing when you start to see that kind of language. The other thing that,
so
that
I received documents from my friends at Special Op at Delta, which I taught support for years in Planetary Academy of Environmental Medicine, and I've worked on as a doctor on number of very classified questions. And the one that I am personally aware of, in 1894, was later put on the MNA for over in Iraq. And they were able to send a carbonically focused sideband microwave, which then to disrupt the DNA of 5 miles. And what it would do is it would basically zip the non-covalent bond DNA double helix, release the peroxisome, supplies the cells out of the chest. First symptoms would be disorientation, nausea, vomiting, then blindness, and then bleeding, smaller, total collapse, out of the chest, which is we call apoptosis. So, you know, programmed cell death happens very quickly for a matter of 45 minutes. So, they developed these weapon systems, and they, of course, tested them in their real battlefield conditions. But they also have plans, in fact, from my contact, they have both gas, knockdown, and lethal nerve gas, cylinder-based mycotoxin, and they also have directed energy harmonic weapons, station is attached to helicopters, by every American city and town, large and small. And that's from my contact. So they're doing operational drills, not just with Americans, but with foreign troops on American soil with our equipment to make sure they control the population. Of total style destruction, non lethal weapons control the crowd with calming agents, harmonic frequency, knockdown agents, whatever they want to use.
Well, you know, and that doesn't surprise me. You know, actually, the international treaties that forbid our use of biological and chemical weapons against any foreign adversary actually have a provision within them that permits domestic use, in fact, specifically allows for it under the treaties, under the issues of national sovereignty.
Right.
The interesting point there is, if you think back on that event in Moscow a few years ago where the Chechens and the movie theater and a bunch of civilians and Chechens and everybody else got gassed and
right.
a bunch of them died, that gas they couldn't have used off of their soil in a foreign conflict under the treaties that Russia is a signatory to,
right.
nor could we, but we can use them at home. And this is an important issue because the joint statement of cooperation between Justice and DOD on the development of non-lethals uses exactly that same kind of exclusionary language, almost word for word. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, it's actually a title. I'm trying to remember the actual name of the title. I'm looking at the document. And it gives permission to any kind of public. I discussed on my other radio show, the medical report, Dr. Nichols, in the vaccines were given to our Gulf War I vets now are spreading now these very nasty mycoplasma infections. It's a global pandemic of mycoplasmal infections causing chronic fatigue, autoimmune, organic and brain dysfunction, neurotransmitter problems. And it's just another example of the military industrial biological weapons biotechnologies complex spreading use of its weapons and side effects to the public as well as prisons.
Yeah, you know, actually, once again, you know, when you look back historically on sort of this reoccurring theme, because, you know, American citizens being used in involuntary experimentation is nothing new. In fact, over 500,000 Americans from 1940 to the present time, up until the time of at least Secretary of Energy O'Leary under the Clinton administration, she actually admitted 500,000 victims. And yet, you know, no one has ever been held accountable for any of that. And this kind of reckless experimentation without consent, you know, in any other place in the country, if it were happening to U.S. citizens, you know, we'd
right.
be outraged. And yet,
what I heard is a lot of it was shifted from the biological weapon research by science out to the Department of Energy, sticking their budget.
Yeah, that's true, and a lot of it ends up getting outsourced even out of the country, you know, where
right.
we take advantage of third country surrogates and surrogate governments that we've installed by, you know, political interference or whatever we want to
right.
call it. You know, the kinds of things that, again, you know, really violate the sovereignty of other nations. You know, that's why we're in a lot of the problems we're in today. I mean, if you think about these technology transfers that started with political changes in starting in Iran when we installed the Shah back in the 50s, and he tortured
right.
and tormented his people, and we armed him heavily to be a wall against the former USSR and China. And then we, you know, and then that fell apart because, you know, people don't like being oppressed and tortured. And then they took over with even a more radical government. Then we ended up backing Iraq to create a balance between Iran and Iraq, and we supplied them technology and weapons and created the fourth largest army in the world. And then, you know, I mean, we could go on and on. I mean, Osama bin Laden's another case of the CIA training him so well we can't find the guy. And
of course, the operational people who were trained by our CIA and our Special Forces Delta in Iraq, the part of the Republican Guard were operating at the Oklahoma City bombing in the 70s. That in fact these people are now working for us.
Yeah, and you know these kinds of situations when they come back and really harm us, it really boils back down to the fundamental errors made in the beginning, which are interfering in cultural contexts that we know nothing about, and
right.
and sleeping with adversaries that, quite frankly, are our adversaries on an ideological level. And
right,
really,
I hear reports, for example, that Dr. Cohen, the inventor of the neutron bomb, through a ceremony in which the nuclear technology handed over directly to the leaders of the Republican Army. That's pretty disturbing here. I would talk numerous occasions to my people who take care of nuclear technology, storage tech, IBM, all these corporations, very highly classified work, and they would kind of just share with me. I said, "Look, you've got security, you've got to stick that figure in that hole in the wall. Why do you have these things going on?" And I just posed what I call churning same question. They come back, they start getting their eyes to get real big, and then a week or so later they come back and we did something. There was one case of a fellow that was actually working with Lucid Technologies, and when they kind of decided to pull the security check on him, somehow got him to own a proper check, he was from Yemen, they went back to his place and weren't even fingerprints on the switch, not even hair or even flesh. So it was obviously cleaned by professionals. So,
yeah.
You know, that's the kind of foolishness going on, and I thought it was not just security pipeline. I happened to see the actual documents in December of 1993 where Lockheed Martin set up a dummy corporation on the London Stock Exchange so they could transfer to the uplink in Beijing, People's Republic Army in China, and the Russian rocket targeting technology to hit U.S. cities and weapons. More accurate satellite target, and also MIRV technology that was transferred from Los Alamos, and micro-miniaturization technologies, etc. And I'm thinking, how crazy to deal with these nations now when the senior military people from China tell us that, you know, Peter Drew with their strategic influence from Taiwan, they'll just 200 to that. I mean, it all comes home. Do you want to buy Walmart things, or do you want to get new?
Yeah, you know, and you know, the people don't really understand that we have helped build what is now the most rapidly growing industrial economy in the world, which is China. And as
right,
a result,
right.
Their productive capacity can be converted, just like ours was in World War II, from sewing machines to rocket launchers. Only now it doesn't take years to do this. It takes days to reset computer programs and reload new software in modern manufacturing plants to go from making boards for TVs to boards for guided missile systems.
Right.
And the Chinese capacity for production, you know, in terms of military spending, our CIA estimates $40 billion a year being spent, and we outspend that by 11 times. However, what you buy in China for 10 cents on the dollar is significantly greater than
right.
what you buy in the United States. And as a consequence, you really have to look at productive capacity, not dollars. And when you start to look at productive capacity, there is good reason to be concerned, not just for potential military impacts, but just the unbridled development and the manner in which it's happening in China jeopardizes the health of the entire world. I mean, heavy metals are blowing into the western states and all of the western side of Canada in dust streams that have been documented, you know, have been flowing for centuries, perhaps millennium. But in this particular time, what's coming across are every thing going up a stack.
Right. Toxic chemicals, heavy metals, micro nanoparticles, everything.
Everything. And these are all the pollutants leading to the general degradation of the health that you're also seeing, only being amplified by all of these other factors that, you know, are coming into play. So, you know, these things are two-edged swords in terms of how we look at these advantages of both price and technology. I mean, these things should be advanced, and a lot of good ideas are being advanced, but at the same time, they need to be advanced on a platform of relevant values. And this is where I think there needs to be perhaps, and I think we're hearing it more and more, an approach towards international relations that really leaves people alone as long as they are not interfering with the sovereignty of another. You know, that was the whole rule of nations that we existed
right.
fairly well under. You know, from time to time, conflicts occur, but ultimately, maybe it's that breakdown in mutual respect, and our country and other countries are guilty of it that has led.
Well, I think part of it actually is that some of these conflicts are actually state-managed, and corporate have better income in maintaining conflict. Really interesting. This year.
Yeah.
Last year, actually, 2005, that Carlyle, back in the first large construction company in China, called Baggins, and the largest airports on the planet, and
yeah.
are using up more concrete than any other civilian building project in the world.
Yeah.
And all of these things are occurring, and it's interesting that the shareholders, the people that own them, that actually ordered the concrete companies that are privatized, resources is the Queen and the Carlock, which of course is the Bin Laden, George Bush, and all the other terrorists.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, the 45 largest economies of Europe no longer need. They're an expansion of corporations. They own their own military, their own research facilities, their own hospitals. No longer need national. multinational like the United Nations is corporate, yes, which now rule. And yes, for decades, nations have been the club of nations of the world. So it's made even things like the United Nations relevant. And that's what concerns me particularly, is because we have this happening. And so even the dialectic of conflict, on the border between creating global and eventually a matrix to control everyone, which comes back to square one. They're destroying the planet Earth's environment with ecological manipulation of the weather, with tremendous industrialization. Don't be concerned over the pathology of destroying the people over in China. The amount of pollution in some of these cities is phenomenal. It blows all the way over North America and Europe.
Yep.
It's just mind-boggling kind of crazy going on, but nation states no longer actually have the leverage to export and incorporate. Many of them are U.S.-based transnational corporations, but they're now the largest companies on the planet.
Yeah, and actually you see it influencing more and more public policy. And if you really, I mean, here's a good example of it. You know, here in Alaska, we have 35 trillion cubic feet of natural gas that the oil companies have in proven reserves.
Right.
And yet they have never built the pipeline necessary to carry that to domestic markets, which certainly is energy issues and energy independence is indeed a national policy priority, has been since 1973 when we went through the oil embargo.
Right.
And yet when they built the oil line, and easily they could have put in a gas line at that time, and certainly they can still do it today in a fairly quick order, it's not what the direction of where the development is going. They're intending to put it through Canada, which will take 10 years to complete instead of 3 years to complete, if they can even acquire enough steel to build a pipeline that long.
Because this is just the Trans-Alaska pipeline you're talking about, right?
Right, and that's 700 miles just to get it to portside through Alaska. If you go through Canada, you've got to triple that length. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, bringing it through Canada, it'll then be split. It won't just be carrying U.S. gas, because Canadians aren't going to grant that easement unless it's also toting their
right,
gas, which doesn't help our balance of payments any, and continues to keep natural gas, domestic natural gas, locked up in Alaska. And that's not including the what they call the marginal or non-proven reserves, but those extrapolate even much larger in terms of dollars and domestic capacity. So, I mean, there's a lot of things in Alaska right now in terms of oil basins that have been well-defined, and gas basins well-defined within reasonable areas for development, even laying aside some of the more controversial areas like...
Yeah, not even touching the areas that are ecologically fragile.
Right. I mean, the fact of the matter is, the reason that issue is up on the boards is because you always like to take off the toughest target first in the climate where people are panicked and prices are high and everyone is willing to go along, and that's what's been staged now and was staged in 1973 when the original Trans-Alaska oil pipeline passed by a tie vote in the U.S. Senate, broken by Agnew just a few months before he was thrown out of office for corruption. I mean, what
right,
happened then, I don't disagree with, wasn't a good idea. In fact, I think it was a good idea. But the fact of the matter is, since that time, a comprehensive energy policy that works in our national interest and not those corporate interests you were speaking about is what's been missing and continues.
Exactly, and that's why the two are in conflict. And, in fact, what we see going on is a dance where George Bush and his junta are actually dancing to the tune of the oil conglomerate, not national security of America. So they've actually brought America into this proxy war, where in the first place they brought us over to Iraq to control, I call it the gold finger.
Right.
Not to release the oil, but to supply people with money to rebuild the country in advance of Iraq.
Right.
And the other nations, but also to make sure the oil is not available, so it doesn't affect the world market, the price can rise. And also to be concerned about the oil board in Iran, why they want to take off there. And of course, the Black Ops project, which don't respond to either Congress or the Senate control, so that they can chip in all these illegal drugs and $250 billion a year to the Western nations on top of that. And this has been, a criminal activity going on for decades, which is why, of course, they started with the Harrison Narcotic Act back in many decades, because they had to create a dialectic of conflict so they could control the source of market institutions so they could control the capital. And that, to me, you see, is a form of transnational treason the iceberg with Oklahoma City 9/11.
Yeah.
It's just symptoms of something much more malevolent than toxicity. You know, trying to stick a chip in everybody in America, Canada, and Mexico, it opens the floodgates and the doors to illegal immigration. At the same time, rational immigration, which should come from every nation, is not being pursued and makes the people who are helping and don't support have local epidemics. So for every person that comes into the community, 36 other American citizens sick with resistant TB.
Yeah.
That's only one example. I mean, they literally could turn America, like the movie V for Vendetta, into a leprechaun.
Well, you know, there's so much so much being created just to scare the heck out of people. I mean, when you think about the fear level in the country right now, which actually is in fact the ideal environment for ushering in these new technologies, because
of course it is. That's why they sell fear per barrel costs more than oil.
Yeah, and you know, if you go back to a paper actually written at the U.S. Army War College, it was called "The Revolution of Military Affairs and Conflict Short of War," written in 1989, and what it talked about was this idea of creating an environment of fear to bring in these kinds of technologies. In fact, that U.S. Army War College document actually talked about implant technologies in American servicemen as an example, or being able to knock out aircraft. Perhaps with a load of terrorists on board, so they would be knocked out and they'd crash. And the idea was that we would do it without any declaration of war or any courts or trials, or maybe we'd make even a mistake. And if you remember, just a few years ago, our Air Force provided Peruvian intelligence information on an international drug trafficker that was literally shot out of the sky, only to be the family, a missionary, and his family. The fact of the matter is we cannot engage in a reckless pursuit of fear and look at weapon systems to be developed as our savior. That is not, in my view, the answer in a democratic republic.
No, it isn't. In fact, what I see is a movement toward what I call called Earth King, where a conglomerate of transnational corporations, not the United States, not even Black, but middle third form a collective, whether it's the UN or something else, have rational global policy. We have corporations that are deciding to incorporate things in their boardroom, and that's what we're seeing now with boardroom governance. And it's extremely disturbing because most people don't know, aren't aware, even from the area level, that's the highly compartmentalized program. The 96% of all advanced science for the last century or more is all classified.
Yeah, you know, that whole issue of corporate governance, if you think about it, you know, this last big change in the bankruptcy laws, which were done by the lobby of credit card companies primarily,
right,
was done to really create a new class of folks. You know, as the U.S. dollar continues to drop and our ability to even buy the foreign goods coming in at previously what were cheap prices will go increasingly higher, our own energy costs and every product that we absolutely need, from heating our homes to feeding our families, to getting to and from work in our automobiles, all of those things are going to affect every family dramatically within the United States in the next year. And the roll-up costs and all of that are going to be incredible. The basic standard of living is going to continue to drop only because of multinational corporate greed and the development of a cabal of cooperation, because now, as those things happen, people aren't going to be able to even have a restart. They're going to be introduced to the concept of indentured servitude, something that was gotten rid of. One of the reasons this country formed in the first place. You know,
yeah, exactly. No taxation without representation. And, of
right,
course, the workhouses that were set up back 700 years ago, workhouse debt.
Yep.
And this kind of thing, which is these new bankruptcy laws, basically, and they're manipulating it straight across.
Yeah,
when you don't publish the M3, when you publish trillions of extra dollars,
yep,
when you purposely tell your creditors you're not going to publish it, and
yep,
you let the dollar literally free fall on purpose while you are planning literally international cooperation, a preemptive war against Iran, where they have huge business deals like $200 billion gas oil deal with China and Iran, and
yep,
huge deals with pipelines all the way from Iran, India, and Pakistan. It's really not smart. And it's designed on, specifically, the crosshairs aren't on Iran. They're on the American public, the middle class.
Yep.
And that's what I see going on. The farmers, I was listening to Sidney Williams talk on the show with Liberty Radio, with Dr. Stan Montesa last week on an archive just a few weeks ago. Sidney Williams, he's an oil expert. He was invited by farmers in Western Colorado, Texas, Panhandle, Oklahoma, and Nebraska, Texas, about the issues of the ability of the farmers who are basically saying this is the last year they're going to trust because the price of diesel fuel is going to get so high that the farmers are blowing their brains out every week. Now, I'm not trying to just say this to scare people, but I want them to see, I always believe that the two options, both the ugliness and beauty of reality, and then has a plan to respond in a positive way to it corporately. And if we don't face the music, what's really going on, then we're never going to respond and get control of it. We're going to be, wrestling myths and legends.
Well, and this is, the big battle's taking place in my region right now. You know, we're one of the last regions of the country that has huge national resources. You know, most of Alaska is public land. 70% is federal land. And,
right.
And of that federal land are the largest mineral and energy resources, some of the biggest reserves left on the planet. We have the largest, one of the largest zinc mines operating now. Of 33 strategic minerals, we have 32 in mineable quantities that could meet much, if not all, of U.S. demand,
right,
as well as enough for exports. We have more oil and gas here than any other place in the United States. They say with our oil shales here and with our coal resources, we could run the United States for 2,000 years on domestic energy. The reality is these resources right now in our legislature are being debated for new tax breaks and provisions for an industry that certainly doesn't deserve any in the current marketplace. And yet we have a pipeline here that's actually running at half a capacity, and it's not because there's not enough oil to pump. It's because the tankers that used to carry Alaskan oil are now carrying foreign oil because it's more advantageous at the moment to produce while they squeeze Alaska's legislature for lower tax rates. And
what I've heard is that they have a policy in the U.S. government to let the corporations develop another cheaper oil company, like, and they haven't built a heavy oil refinery in 1997.
That's right.
And the fact is, because they haven't been helped build heavy oil refinery, we now have only the light sweet heavy just being capped off. And so we have all these capped wells all over America and
right,
and elsewhere that are not being utilized at all because they don't have the proper refining capacity. They never even put the money back to develop it, which takes, an average lead time in engineering and financing of 5 years.
And that's exactly right. The investment in the infrastructure has been lagging. And, in the former Soviet Union, right across the water from Alaska, they cut deals with the former Soviet Union where they were able to get 50% royalties to the government and huge capital commitments for the infrastructures. Well, here in Alaska, there's been no capital commitment made in over 30 years of
any kind.
Isn't
that crazy?
And
of course, that's
no
reason why the Russians now have got Europe capital. They have all the pipelines and oil. Now they've got price of gas and oil. They're former CIS nations like Ukraine and Europe right through the ceiling. And of course, Europe is now trying to nuclearize. It's
right,
tremendously expensive. The time for them to take years.
Right.
They're also not as safe as they react to spent off radioactive fuel all the time. They deal with spent fuel rods that are not easy to get rid of, and they often want to convert weapons, like munitions. So it's not a real solution to the issue.
No. In fact, a lot of the possibilities, that are here now. I mean, if you think about just the amount of money we spent on really what was not in the average American's interest, but certainly was in the oil industry's interest, $1 trillion on the Iraqi conflict is what's expected to be spent when it's all said and done. And for $1 trillion, this country could have been completely energy independent within probably the same number of years as we've been hanging around there trying to train them how to be democratic. And the
fact is,
we send our guys to 10 or 12 weeks of basic training and say they're equipped to go fight a war. I think we've been there long enough to train a country how to stand up for themselves.
Yeah, well, I think the whole thing to me is that they want to balkanize it. That's why they want these groups fighting it. So they don't want a united Islamic Republic that we can't control through the transnational corporations because their systems don't allow us to have a separation of both church and state. allows us to use our transnational corporations in rich ways of resources and the power away from the people.
Yeah. But, you know, even considering what's happened now in terms of the consolidation of wealth with oil-producing governments, I mean, what is possible now in terms of those dollars even buying up more important U.S. assets at a discount because of the dollar's free fall? Yeah,
exactly, and of course they're going shopping.
Yeah.
I heard that, in fact, this is what's happening with the Chinese. They're actually trying to buy real estate like farms in America, like crazy, real assets, and $1.
Yep.
And again, this fits into your DVDs. You have Earth Changes, the Ripple Effect.
Right.
And of course, there's a 40,000-year-old mastodon plotting. And we have to be aware that a lot of their theories, like the greenhouse gas theory, is not correct. You know, they want to say it's all due to the destruction of pollutants. Of course, these things are pollutants that are bad for living things and ecosystems, but they're not the common. The global warming, all these planets are warming. We have things that are occurring in a solar level, and we have to face that reality, but we also have to look at what are we doing for our Earth in terms of polluting. I mean, the heavy metal pollutants affecting our young people, our facilities, our IQs and everything. It's unbelievable, and of course, the effect of sonar types of activities in British American nations is absolutely devastating. And the, you know, the tanker channels that bring these huge container ships across the whaling channels where they travel along Pacific, you want to call them highways for the great whale, is killing them all. They're being killed by intersecting the normal biological patterns in the ocean.
Well, you know, and it's a lot that's being affected now. I mean, here in Alaska, again, we have one of the last surviving, it is the largest and last major fishery left on the planet in terms of the northern hemisphere, whether it be Europe or, or our part of the world. And the fact is, these are resources that are critical to all of us on this planet. And balancing the act is not impossible to do. And I think this is where corporate interests and national interests and just plain human interests start to get in conflict, because ultimately it's in all of our interests to be stewards over the planet in a responsible way. And this planet has a huge productive capacity. I mean, we don't have to be thinking about that in some marginalized way. But, you know, there's a tremendous amount of abundance on this planet, and it's a matter of being responsible with it and developing it in a reasonable way.
Well, yeah, don't have draggers or rip up the ocean bottom.
Yeah, exactly.
Add in things like Dr. Isley and Denver, with his scientific colleagues, that all you have to do is add iron sulfate to the opportunity. You have a plant of plankton. You'll increase the entire food chain. So you have not fish, shrimp, and everything you can imagine. And this also becomes crap. Crap is a lot of problems. Crap. All of these things just make sense. And there's a solution to every one of these problems, whether it's electromagnetic pollution, for example, one of the things, things available for that that helps block affect the cell phones. We have another company called BioPro. We're coming up with solutions to detoxify ourselves. We could even come up with things like nanoparticle filters to detoxify the world. But we need to start kind of looking at this globally, not in order to solve it. And I don't see that the corporate model is at all a server.
No, it's not. In fact, it's a model that works against humanity in this sense. You know, corporations are living entities with almost the same rights as a human being from a legal perspective, and yet they have no soul. I mean, they're basically driven by a profit margin, which essentially works off the base interests of human beings. And, you know, there's a combination here, and there can be, I believe, a little bit better a conscious application of our corporate activity in a way that makes people responsible, so that what we do truly does have a right impact. I mean, think about Chinese position in U.S. farmland. Now, why would they do that? It's because they don't take this quarter-to-quarter corporate mentality when they look at the long view of how do they further their ideology, their basic value system. They look over 30 or 40 years, and they know
that's why they're buying up oil tar sands rights in Lloydminster, Alberta, because they want to have access to that oil tar sands.
Or be able to deny us
access. Dry up.
You know, just delay the production, make food production not come out quite so right. You know, but the point of the matter is, you know, these are, you know, these changes that are taking place globally need to be analyzed against value systems, and that's what's not being done within corporate and government today. Where value systems of populations used to determine what governments looked at, it was called consent of the people. You know, government wasn't imposed on you. It sprung from you, and that's what's missing in Iraq. You know, we're trying to impose governments on people. It doesn't work that way. That's not how we were founded. That's not how we should see or expect other countries to be founded either.
Absolutely, and in fact, here's the solution side of it, because that's kind of
the
latter quarter of the program. The solution side, and of course, people can obtain those on your website, right?
Right, that's correct. You know,
and also they can get it on my website for free, which I just sent to the orders forward, justmedical.com, but that's PARP, the update, angels still don't play the PARP, and earth changes, the ripple effect. Of course, you have some defined technology, you know, the balancing of very important activity,
right,
other things on the website. And you have your other books, because we need to all start educating, not only educating ourselves on what I call a knowledge level, but a spiritual wisdom level. Because this wisdom, if we don't appropriate it and then start falling with action, we're about to lose our world. I mean, we're actually,
right.
I think we're, in many ways, a lot of environmentalists, I saw things done that I didn't agree with when I started creating what I call blood on steel pump. And yes, some of these things were done wrong, but what we have to face is that we may have pushed the earth beyond the point of no return. The earth is a living thing. And as we push it too far, we're going to die. We're actually creating a lower carrying capacity for the earth, but the carrying capacity well beyond the length of human lifespan, have people that have healthy, responsible lives, that are poor, and malnutrition. And guess what? People will reproduce less naturally. They'll have much more hot lifestyle. We have expected 200 to 300 years. We won't have the same kind of culture. We won't have a culture of time. But we don't see that. What we see is, in fact, movements toward shortening of lifespan. You can obviously see they have the evidence of things like aspartame and Twix, the FDA with this very dirty deal, and these things are not pulled back. I mean, you know, even when the evidence. We have non-lethal weapons being used on American citizens. Just look at the giant. The chemtrails, like, you know, they're spraying us with Ocasin. They're putting things in our vaccine with Ocasin. They're planning Operation Biochip, 200 vaccines made that can block their pathway, brain, and nervous system. This is just not acceptable. And people need to become aware and need to. You know, I like the quote in the Bible says, you know, be angry and sin not. Have some passion about this.
That's exactly it. And you know, and there's enough issues to get everyone engaged. I mean, and this is, again...
Pick an issue. Pick an issue and then stand by it. I tell people, you don't have to handle everything. Pick an issue that really gets you active and makes you want to pick it up and then run with it.
You know, in terms of solutions, something I tell people often, it's a simple thing to do. You know, write down something you can do in 10 minutes and put it in with wherever you keep your bills. And when you're done with that miserable task each month of filling out those bills, take 10 minutes and write a letter to the editor. Do a handwritten letter to a congressman or senator. Talk to a friend. But pick the issue that you are passionate about and take an action that's affirmative in a positive direction, and recognize there are millions of other people doing similar things every day, and eventually it does make a difference. And I think that's where we can't lose hope and lose heart. Doing a little bit gives us back a whole lot of our own power, and it's time to let go of the fear and grab hold of the passion that motivates us as creative human beings that we were created to be. And
absolutely.
I think that's the claim to our birthright that we need to express and take control of our governments, take control of our neighborhoods, and get this place back to represent the kind of values all of us can be proud of.
Yeah, and I talk to people, they need to start working at their local levels. They have to not think global first. They need to think local.
That's right. You know, it starts right next door, you know, and there's a lot of things that, you know, when we look around our neighborhoods and look around our communities that we can be doing. And no matter what our calling is, we need to start expressing it without the fear that keeps getting sent our direction. That's not
yep.
how people are meant to live.
Right. Well, what they've done, of course, is the transnational corporations have had a dialectic. They need to create security, they need to create fragility. For example, one of the things they have solar panels up here is
yep.
going to knock out power grid. We
yep.
know that with the increased global climatic changes, many of the places that were producing are not going to.
And this is, again, where national policies need to be developed now, because we can fight till the cows come home about what the cause is. The reality is here, and everyone agrees it's not changing or reversing in the short term. So given
right.
that, let's look at where the new weather patterns are. Let's look at where our agricultural regions are going to change and start preparing our farmers and preparing our agricultural resources to meet the needs based on what is absolutely irrefutable today. You know, here again in Alaska, we have huge potential agricultural areas that have never been developed. We don't have the insects. We don't need the pesticides.
Huh?
We have incredible sunlight in the summer and virgin soils, and yet these...
Well, yeah, the soils in Alaska are very remarkable. I know one of my friends, Bill Spence, actually is working with a soil biologist, and the soil in Alaska grows these giant vegetables.
It does indeed. And,
it's just amazing. Your soil up there is like miracle.
Yeah, there's no place on the planet that grows as large a produce as can be grown here. And the quality of that produce in terms of its mineral content and its nutrition is significantly greater. It goes back to how it used to be in the 1940s and 50s in the lower 48 before their food became degraded by the reductions in nutrients available within the soil.
Well, they kill the fixing bacteria
yep,
by
everything.
Using fertilizers to destroy those bacteria, which are necessary to create the food chain, to create the elements, which make the vitamin, mineral, and active enzyme place in every part of the living thing.
Absolutely. And then on top of it, you know, again, the way in which plants uptake nutrients are also through not just the root systems, but also through the leaves. In the case of, again, particulate material coming in from all over the world, this tends
right.
to affect plant health as well. But all of these things are things that science is aware of.
Yeah,
and
we have solutions. And, again, every one of these, we need to have you back on to talk about many more of these solutions, too. But you've got some very, very good narrative teaching talk on here. And, of course, you have a seminar that I think is going to happen very shortly. It's the one you're going to last seminar.
We've got actually a number of them scheduled for September. We just left San Francisco, and we're headed back down to Seattle to do a lecture there this weekend, and then through Southeast Alaska I'm lecturing along the way. So
yeah, that's nice, isn't it? And of
course, it is.
What it does is it gets people to get immersed into the topic, so they realize they get empowered.
That's exactly right. There's a lot to be said for that, and you know, I think technology can be that double-edged sword. Let's make sure it serves our interests rather than works against us. And I think that's the challenge for this century and the challenge for each of us.
Yeah, I don't want to see people turf out the baby with the bathwater and say all technology is bad. No, technology without the dominance of what I call spirit, positive, corporate.
That's exactly right.
And that's where we see, for example, it's not bad to have, let's say, super tankers. They need to be double hauled. We need to also make sure our shipping lanes don't cross shipping capacity. The great whales. We need to make sure you don't use lethal sonar systems in our oceans to destroy all the
right.
animals that require those sound waves to exceed the water. That's how they know by sound. And destroys their biology and kills them. And those are absolutely unnecessary. They're lethal technologies. Amazing that they're out there. Whales beaching themselves because they're being driven crazy.
And this, these problems are all can be resolved, and they're not impossible. It just requires a little bit more dialogue, a little bit slower approach. And and that's been part of the problem with the rapidity, just the speed in which things are changing. There's no real time to look at the impacts of those changes. And
some of them are very obvious. I mean, you don't even have to do a double blind study. You look at it and say, look, you got to stop. That technology is banned. Boom. Okay. Simple thing. You can't take track of burning critical controls all over. You can't have workers in one place, one country like India, having completely different environmental standards where moving into corporations destroy them with no workers' compensation.
No. And these have happened way too often. You know, standards aren't uniform across the planet.
No. And what they do, of course, they'll say they have all these laws in America, so we can't compete. They export all of our business, and we want, we could, you know, as we move into what I call the next thing, you know, what I call the slave thing, is we're going to move into intelligent manufacturing. Don't require it very minimum. And into a robotic.
And it's happening so rapidly, again, and people are not really recognizing it because we're all working too hard. I mean, look around at how many families now work 2 and 3 jobs to make it all work, when even in the 1960s, tradespeople could expect to make a good living, pay for a home, get their kids through college. You know, that dream should not be dead in the wealthiest country on the planet.
Well, I think what it is by design, and that's why I want people to take back control and say no. Heck no, we're not going to do this. We're not going to allow. We're going to go back and revise U.S. Financial system so we can get rid of the $6.6 trillion debt, the hegemony of the Rothschilds and the international bank. We're going to get rid of the $8.7 trillion immediately. I mean, I heard that this war over Iraq and written on the debt notes of the World Bank wasn't even put.
Yeah.
And that to me is a form of financial insanity. You know, you don't run a debt note. If you look at the total debt in Canada, which is a terrible country, it's $486 billion in Canada. That's not small. They have 4.86 trillion U.S. debt, but instead America has $87.3 trillion and rising in the price. And that's not going to work. I mean, and if you have the linchpin of the world, which is consuming and the technological powerhouse collapse, the whole world will suffer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's no question about it. I mean, and we have not seen really the full impact of what energy pricing means in terms of consumers, and we won't see that probably.
Well, I think we're going to see a year and a half. We're going to see food go through the ceiling.
Yep.
And that's where people need to start taking personal responsibility. Get off the grid.
By the way,
get a guard.
By the way,
do these other things. And
Dr.
We're definitely going to have you back, Dr. Nick, because you got some amazing.
Yeah, Dr. Deagle. Dr. Deagle.
Yes, Don. And we're ready to.
Oh no, your phone keeps cutting in and out. It's been doing that since you started.
Has it?
Yeah. The phone's been cutting in
and out. Well, that's probably just somebody trying to call me.
I don't know. No, it's been cutting in and out like your line's been really bad today, and I just had several emails on it, some from one guy in the Netherlands telling me the same thing, and I listened for. So it's the phone. I knew that.
It's a phone issue.
You couldn't have repaired it, so I just let it, you know.
Yep. All right, guys.
Well, we had a good program. We'll do many more.
I'm looking forward to it, Dr. Deagle. I'm going to be out for about a week, but I'll be back after the 14th.
Give me a ring after you get back, and we'll plan another program because we have so many more issues to talk about, and you're one of the best educators on this.
Well,
I really appreciate
everybody
listening to the Playing Iron with Dr. Bill Deagle and myself, and our special guest, Dr. Nick Begich. The website, of course, is earthpulse.com, and, of course, you can obtain his latest DVDs, The Earth Game, Ripple Effect, The Last Sound, The Alarm, Harm, The Update, Angels Still Don't Play, The Tarp. And, of course, visit NutraMedical.com, my website, and we're going to soon have Play and Iron Up, an amazing website and learning center for the most remarkable educators, spiritual people, and scientists that you can imagine. Try to open your eyes, raise your level of consciousness, and give you empowerment and solutions to some of these challenges. Thanks, Dr. Nick, and I appreciate everybody listening. And thank you, Don and Doug and BBS Radio and everyone. And, of course, remember that we're having a conference coming up May the 26th, 7th, and 8th in the Aziza Hotel in Laguna Beach with Dr. Fred Bell. That's the 26th, 27th, 28th. I'll be speaking for an hour or so on Friday, an introductory and co-presenting, and then on Sunday for probably 4 hours, all kinds of important topics, including health and engagement generation. Political, globalist topics, above government technology, exopolitics, you name it, we'll be talking. So, amazing conference. Don't miss it. And if you don't get to the conference, get the DVD and make sure you listen to the program. Thanks, Dr. Nixon. Thanks, Don and Doug and everybody at BBS and, of course, Dr. Fred Bell.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.